Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Leah Thompson. You will know her from Back to the Future trilogy and many other things. Leah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I know you're on set right now, right? So if we need to jump off, we will. What are you in the middle of shooting?
I'm shooting the season 4B of my show Switched at Birth on ABC Family.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of a scene. It's very, very glamorous, let me tell you.
I appreciate you stepping aside and, you know, middle of costume changes and everything and talking with us. Now, you'll be in D.C. On Friday at Wolf Trap, actually technically Virginia. But how did they get you roped into doing the show? Did they call and say, hey, we have a 30th anniversary thing going on. Want to join us? So tell us how you got involved.
No, they asked me, and I have a sister in Baltimore, so it seemed like fun to just go and see that. I love that score. I love the orchestra. I love Wolf Trap. I've danced there before, so I'm excited to see it again.
When did you dance there?
In 1870.
That was pre-Charleston, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I think it was with the Pennsylvania Ballet. I can't even remember. It was so long ago. I was like 19.
Gotcha. And was this? You said a sister in Baltimore? Is this younger, older sister?
My older sister. I'm the youngest of five, and so my other sister is going to come with me. So we're going to have three sisters in D.C.
Oh wow.
That's going to be fun.
That's going to be a lot to handle there. A lot of Thompsons.
Yeah.
Awesome. So it's a family affair. That's great. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned the music. I mean, how much do you think that Alan Silvestri score added to it? And I mean, obviously it really elevates so many scenes, and you know, people can hum it even if they haven't seen the movie in probably 30 years, they can still probably hum that one.
Oh, I know. It was an impeccable score. I mean, you know, that's what's so great about this movie. Like, there's an alchemy about our business, you know, and you never know when it's going to work, when the magic's going to all come together. And, you know, every element of that, of Back to the Future, kind of really works. There's, like, no bad scenes. There's no bad, you know, actors. There's no, you know, it's all so good. And the music is definitely a gigantic part of it. You know, all the themes were so beautiful and interesting. And, you know, even the source music was wonderful, you know. So the Huey Lewis songs were great. And
Yeah. Well, and even the stuff when you go back, you know, with Earth Angel and, you know, all this Mr. Sandman, all the stuff, it really brought out the time period, no matter what time period you guys were in.
I know, I always take credit for Mr. Sandman, because I used to hum Mr. Sandman before I played young Lorraine. Every single scene, I would hum Mr. Sandman to get in character.
Is that where they got the idea to use it?
I think so, because, you know, they incessantly heard it.
Will you hum a little for us right now?
Well, boom, 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 Mr. Sandman. Yes?
That's awesome. Let's talk about you playing Lorraine, because you've, you know, between the three movies, you had to play her in many different iterations. You had the Biff version in the second one, which is entirely different from, you know, the Old West Mr. Eastwood in the third one, and then, of course, you in the first one. Which one was, did you have a favorite among all the different iterations?
You know, they're all dear to my heart, but I really did love the Biff with the, you know, the drunken floozy with the big boobs. I like that character. I've been trying to play, now that I'm, you know, past her age, I've been trying to play that character. No one will cast me as that.
What, the drunken floozy?
I have her on my reel because I'm like, now I'm really, I could play her still. No one believes it. I did it when I was 25. I can do it now.
I think you can still do it. I think you can still pull it off.
Yeah, but nobody will let me.
Well, maybe you just need to get the right opportunity.
Yeah, for sure.
Keep pitching that one. Keep pitching that one.
Keep pitching. You can play a drunken floozy. You're so sweet. Thank you.
that whole sequence, it always reminded me of kind of It's a Wonderful Life, like Pottersville, you know, the darker alternate reality. You know, back in the 50s, it's a little more bubblegummy, but then in that, you know, in the sequel, you have to find a darker edge. How do you keep the same character but take a darker slant on it?
I don't know, you know, but all I can report is, you know, this far away from it, it doesn't even seem like it was me. So, but I can say I think I did, you know, I'm proud of the work that I did. I worked really hard, you know. I mean, sometimes people don't think that actors work hard, but I've seen my notes. Sometimes I like dig up some scripts or come across them, and there's like the whole thing is covered in notes. So I did a lot of work trying to, you know, to come up with the different characters. And also, you know, the material was really good.
Absolutely. What was it like working with across Michael J. Fox and having to play his mother, but also, you know, someone that's batting her eyes at him at the same time? You had to kind of play his age, but also the audience would know you're his mother. So what was that, pulling that one off?
It was definitely funny and confusing and weird. And, you know, I mean, it really was an interesting subversive role. And even though everyone kind of just thinks of it as being innocent, it was a lot of, you know, she really basically just was very horny. So
for her own son. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very interesting, but you know, I'm really, really honored that people are still celebrating these movies. And I love all the Back to the Future fans, and we're all so amazed and happy that they have such longevity, and that, you know, if this is the 30-year anniversary, is kind of insane and exciting and fun and crazy and surreal.
I'm sure. I've always wanted to know, how did you not break character and laugh when, you know, when George McFly comes up and says, "My density has brought me to you."
You're like, density. He was hilarious. He was actually genius in that part. I was just watching him. My daughter was in Texas Rising, the miniseries on HBO that just finished yesterday. And so I was watching, and Crispin Glover's in that. And he's such a genius. We especially were laughing at him in the first movie when he's watching The Honeymooners, and we were old and he was watching The Honeymooners. Yeah. I remember specifically nobody on the crew could make it through that night because he was so funny.
He turns to the camera and does that little laugh when he's...
Exactly. That's exactly... He does this weird snaky thing with his neck. And that's exactly the moment that nobody could keep from cracking up.
I'm picturing it in my mind right now. He's like, he does and that little laugh. It breaks me up every time. I can imagine you guys on set trying to get through
that. We couldn't get through it. Nobody could.
And then what about in the second one, how did you guys achieve that where, you know, when you double back on itself back to 1955 again, and you're, you know, you're running into your own characters of your former selves? Like, how was that even achieved by Zemeckis?
Well, that was particularly difficult because Crispin Glover was not there, so right. They had somebody impersonating him. So that was really triply difficult because we were missing one of the actors, and it was unfortunate. But it was interesting. It would be easy to do nowadays, but at that point there was this giant camera called the Tondro that we used, especially when I was like 80 and there were three Michael Foxes in the scene. That was really difficult. Now it would be easy, but at the time it was very difficult.
But that's what I think made it so inventive for, you know, you guys were doing things at the time when it wasn't easy. Similar when he goes and does Roger Rabbit, it's the fact that Zemeckis was pulling that off in that time. And similarly with Gump, things that nowadays would be so much more easy. But, you know, the fact you guys are doing it then is really remarkable, and it holds up. All of them hold up.
Yeah. You know, my daughter was just watching, Interstellar. I can't remember what movie it is. It's with Jodie Foster that Bob Zemeckis directed.
Mm-hmm. Was it Contact?
Contact, yeah. Exactly. And she was just like, he's a genius. He is not respected enough, in my opinion. Because he is like 100% genius. Every one of his movies is, like you said, innovative, inventive. You know, and has so many different elements of comedy and suspense and, you know, wonder. He's an amazing director. I was so lucky to work with him on three movies.
Absolutely. And how did that trilogy affect your career? Because I know before, you know, you had done All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise, and then afterwards, obviously, Caroline in the City and everything else you're working on now. But how, you know, do people still come up on the street and just and remember you for that role?
Oh, yeah. Yes. You know, definitely that's my middle name. Leah, Back to the Future Thompson. And that's okay with me. It's a great movie, and I'm honored to be known for it. You know, I mean, I feel like I've done a lot of really interesting work since then, but you know, it's definitely resonates, and it's wonderful that it resonates all over the world, and it still does. I mean, like I said, I'm very honored and pleased.
Absolutely. Do you think another 30 years from now we'll be able to, you know, have the same conversation and people will still remember it just as fondly?
I don't know. I certainly hope so. We didn't expect this to happen, all of us. So, you know, it could happen. It seems to be like a holiday staple, and people really like showing it to their kids. The movie still holds up, oddly, and that's a real blessing.
Absolutely. Well,
I think the themes are really resonant to people. The idea that, you know, we all still feel like we're 17 at heart, and that your kids were people too, and you know, and the especially in Back to the Future 1, the idea that one moment of courage could change your whole life, you know, that everything you do every day is important on some level. I think that's a lesson that everyone wants to remember and teach their children and their grandchildren.
Yeah, I think there's just something about, you know, parents, when they show it to their kids, the idea of seeing yourself in your children, and then for kids, you know, seeing that your parents were once your age, too, and, you know, it doesn't matter if it's in the 50s or the 80s or, I guess, 2015, that's where they went to in the sequel.
Right.
You guys got a little bit right with that stuff. You know, we had, there's a Miami baseball team now, and, you know, they didn't make it to Jaws 15 or whatever, but, I mean, look at Sharknado, and you guys nailed the sequel thing pretty good.
Well, you know, we certainly didn't expect people to, you know, I don't know. I think Bob was really into showing the future in a funny way, you know. So that's what he was concentrating on, not exactly duplicating the future.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, all that aside, I think what you were saying about the, you know, the parents become the kids and the kids become the parents, I think those themes are what make it resonate. And whether it's 85, 1955, 2015, and hopefully 30 years from now, hopefully I think it will still work. So
from your lips to God's ears.
Well, hey, thanks so much for taking time. I know you're busy on set, so we'll let you get back at it. And remind us what the show is.
Switched at Birth on ABC Family.